Hey everybody, welcome inside Penalty Box Radio, and no, not Justin B. Bradford. Half Filipino still, but not Justin B. Bradford. But, just in case I somehow ruin this show, that's why Glenn is still here. Thank you so much for A, having me on with you, and B, you're my safety net, so I just love you dearly for that. How are you?
As you are mine. I'm so happy that you're here, Matt. I mean, we've obviously known you for years. Justin talks to you all the time. Yeah. I have not. So it's so exciting to see you again. I'm glad to have you here. It does feel odd without Justin, but you filling in for him is the perfect replacement. So
yeah, we'll take care of things here over at ESPN 102.5 The Game. We've got a busy show too. It's not like it's just a layup show. We've got Chris Meany on from FTN Network. We've got Nick Andrade, who works at the Steve Dangle podcast network. He also is at Sportsnet as an editor. And as always, we have that big Q&A. But I say we just dive into things because pitter patter, let's get at her. All-Star Weekend just happened, and I feel like the NHL All-Star Weekend, you either love it or you just absolutely hate it, and you try to find every single negative that is there to be with the weekend. How do you feel about it?
Honestly, like, I mean, this league, for all of this league's shortcomings, Matt, I have to give them credit in the sense that when it comes to the All-Star game, I feel like they take into consideration what the fans seem to want. I feel like they want to add something unique. They're not opposed to changing things around. And I think that they've been really good, as far as I've been following the game, at curating these events with the fans in mind. It's never going to be perfect. I think the game itself is the most boring part of the weekend. And I was thinking back too, when the All-Star game was in Nashville, the experience as a whole, I experienced that totally different than I experienced it when I watch it on TV. So when you're there, you get to experience firsthand. There's much of that thrill comes from just being there. And I think the problem that the NHL has is that it really just doesn't translate well to the viewers sitting at home. But like, for instance, this year, I loved when they take it out of the arena into the city.
It's I loved the Bellagio fountain. Different to look at. And I mean, that whole blackjack debacle is what I'll call it. I mean, even though that was kind of they were still outside. It wasn't on a rink. Yep. Like, after watching some of the skills competition where Jack Hughes did his magic trick and spun around, and I was like, okay, this is getting kind of tacky. Thank goodness Trevor Zegras saved the show. But as soon as they went outside, I was like, this could be better. They could make this work better in the future, but I like that all the players were just talking like they had a couple beers and they were talking with their buddies at the bar kind of thing. Because you don't get to see that in the NHL compared to other leagues. The NBA is filled with personality. The NFL is filled with the NFL, and that's as far as I'll go there. And the MLB is just kind of a scary place right now. But the one complaint is like, how do we make hockey players more likable to the general public? Because it feels like it's hard to get a fun quote out of someone. Because I promise you, if I hear pucks in deep one more time, it's not going to be a great day. So to me, like you said, it's good, but it could be better. Like, what would be something you would do to make, like you said, the game itself? How could you make that better? Because for me, I'm super stumped on how I'd make that better.
I know. I don't really know that there is, because I think that the excitement, like I said, of the entire event is not necessarily the game. It's the stuff that, and I think it's just, we all love the game of hockey. That's why we're all here, right? And so when we see something outside of the game, that's what we're going to get more excited about. Justin and I have talked on the show a lot about Igor Afanasyev, right, in the Predator system. He has got such a big personality. And Justin and I talk all the time about, when we talk to him, it's so exciting because you are going to get a fantastic quote every time. And it's not that he's trying to do that. He's just being himself. Yep. He's not holding back. And I think that just the more that all of us see players just being themselves in their element, that's going to make us enjoy it more. So I think it's tricky to find a spot to say, like, this is how we can improve the game. But I think they can always improve everything around the game that's going to kind of hype that up a little bit.
Exactly. And I think a lot of it has to do, too, with who gets to go to the All-Star game. I mean, you look at the NBA, and I think NBA does All-Star Weekend perfectly. They invite people based on the events, and then that is about it. So for me, you invite people to the slam dunk competition, who can slam dunk the ball. You invite people to the breakaway challenge, who are going to be fun on breakaways. If anybody hears a slight whine in the background, no, it's not your car. It's not your electronics breaking. It is my lovely dog who would love to play right about now.
And no offense to you, Matt, but I'm watching your dog right now and not you.
That is okay. She's watching everything else and not me as well. But for me, the biggest mess up at NHL All-Star Weekend was not inviting Trevor Zegras initially. It's just, if you want people to love the game, you got to bring in some exciting players. And that Trevor Zegras goal has made the rounds not only in sports networks. Yes, I know. Trevor Zegras should have been there. I know.
She agrees. Look at her face. She agrees. Loves it.
But once you invite good people to the game like that, that's how you're going to get like little Billy, who's 8 years old, watching the game at home going, I want to do that. Instead of watching just a boring breakaway happen where no one really cares. That's what I think you need to bring to the game. And like you said, keep things outside. That it's just more fun.
It adds an extra element to it. And I don't really know how much, you know, the area was blocked off, but I feel like it gets the city excited. I mean, people are probably watching from their windows of a hotel room and they're like, what's going on down there? Like, it's just fun to incorporate the city. And I just think that, I mean, Vegas, whether you're outside or inside, there's always fun, right? So it was very fitting to do that in Vegas.
It's not supposed to be a tourism ad in itself, but I've never been to Vegas. I want to go to Vegas.
I haven't either.
Like, that wasn't enough to sell me. Show me more of Vegas. And I know it's not their responsibility to sell it, but if you're that proud to make it your host city and like everything is gambling themed, speaking of gambling, Chris Meaney coming on the show next from FTN Network, it just would have helped to see a little more oomph in terms of this is why you should care about All-Star Weekend instead of here's a patchwork All-Star Weekend. Speaking of patchwork, though, the Nashville Predators, what do we do at the trade deadline as a Predators just fan base? Do you hope that David Poile throws some more things into the cauldron and gets more rental players or long-term prospects? Do you hope he stands pat? Like Justin and I were talking over on Triple P, Preds, Pucks, Panoys. You can follow us on Twitter at @PPP_. I think they should just stand pat or acquire a backup goalie. Because to me, Juuse Saros can only go so far until he runs out of gas. And I mean, everybody would like to think, oh, he's a young kid. He has all that energy. It's tough when you're getting about 40 shots a night sent at you and you're bailing out your defense left, right, and center. To me, a solid backup that's not Dave Riddick, and no offense to Dave, Big Save Dave, would go a long way. How would you address the team at the trade deadline?
I'm very conservative in this regard that I say stand pat. Justin and I had talked last week about it's either that or possibly adding to the blue line. And I agree with you, Matt, because I think I don't really have a concern for this team at this point for this, but it can be very, very problematic when you have a guy like Juuse Saros playing like he is. The defense, not on purpose, but they can start to sometimes lapse in front of him and not play as well. And he could end up trying to carry this team on his back. That's what you do not want to happen. So if that happened, or if the I word happens, you don't want that to happen. You do need to ensure, because you can't go deep in the playoffs without a solid goaltender. You can't do it.
For me, like, my backup goalie status is the goalie a Curtis McElhinney clone, pretty much, because he to me is the backup of all backups. So you're looking around just above a 900 save percentage, around 903, 904, and a goals against around or near 3. Dave Riddick is way higher for goals against and way lower in save percentage. And it's just not reasonable to think that if called upon, he could carry that team. So to me, you can sacrifice a fourth or fifth round pick with a B-level prospect to ensure that in case the I word does happen, that there is that insurance policy. We can say that I word here.
You can say that. That's
that
a one, good
that
I word.
That one's okay. The one that rhymes with schmingery, we can't say.
Yeah, but we love insurance.
Yeah, exactly. So that's all I would add, because this year was supposed to be a what can the kids do year? What can Matt Duchene do year? What can Ryan Johansson do? Is there anything that these guys can show that they haven't in the past? And I mean, Duchene and Johansson performing the way they are is kind of like a deadline addition in itself if they can keep it up. Because nobody really expected Matt Duchene and Ryan Johansson to kind of live up to their contract. Because in years past, I mean, you're in Nashville, I'm up here in Canada. The whole onus on the Predators has been those two bad contracts. you being there, has that onus slightly been lifted on these guys?
Oh, yeah. And it's been one of those things, too, where we're all just sitting there every season like, I mean, are they going to do this or what? Like, at some point, you have to really start questioning that. And I think that John Hines finally got it out of both of them. And it is very rare that you find people kicking it into their highest gear at the same time. But that's what happened here in Nashville. And so now it just makes perfect sense. And I like what you said. It's almost like they are an addition in and of itself because nobody was prepared for that mentally.
No.
Everybody was still trying to base this team around they're going to be underperforming, and they're not.
It was always a case of what assets does the team need to give up in order to ship out one of these big contracts. This isn't too bad. The team can live with a few of these contracts. We'll get Chris Meany's opinion coming up next. He is from FTN Network. Folks, if you want any information on sports gambling, how to do it responsibly, how to begin, we are going to have all of that information for you with Chris Meany coming up next. You're listening to Penalty Box Radio on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back to Penalty Box Radio on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Coming up on the show right now, we have Chris Meany from FTN Network, and there's one thing that I just do every day like it's a religion, and when Chris posts who he's betting on, I just go and do that. Chris, welcome to the show, buddy. Not to put any pressure on you, but like that's how good you are at this in the field, in my opinion. We'll talk some things about like getting into the industry and like what smart bets are. We'll do betting for beginners, but man, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Out of respect for you, of course. You didn't need to say that, but I do appreciate that. And yeah, thanks for having me, guys. This is going to be a blast.
Let's start with some Preds chat first. The Preds coming into the season, folks, Chris is up in the Great White North, so he's not down in Nashville, but he, as an NHL betting personality, he knows the whole league left, right, and center. So, Chris, going into the season, the Preds, how would you chop them up? Like, where'd you think they were going to finish? How'd you think they were going to do?
I thought, honestly, they'd be a bubble playoff team. I mean, Vegas thought so as well. Actually, probably outside the playoffs, 100-1. 100-1 to win the Stanley Cup before the season started. It's the seventh worst odds in the entire league heading in, and now we're sitting here, they're 30-1, they have 60 points. It's the second most points in the Western Conference. So they've impressed me. I've been super impressed with their squad. I think it starts with UC Saros between the pipes. You know, I think a lot of people had some questions about Saros. Is he an elite goalie? Can he be an elite goalie? I mean, some big skates to fill when Pekka Rinne left. Obviously he had so many great seasons with Nashville, but just taking a look at some of their numbers before I hopped on with you guys, since March 15th of last season, 101 points in 74 games. It's the sixth most in the NHL. Tampa Bay also 101 points over that time span, and they played two more games than the Predators. It's the two-time defending Stanley Cup champions. 1.98 goals against at 5-5 per 60. It's the second best mark in the league. And that has a lot to do with UC Saros. I mean, 942 save percentage since that span, number one in the NHL. 1.79 goals against average, number one in the NHL. He's number one in goals saved above average, and it's not even close between him and number two, Igor Shesterkin. Also faced a league high in shot attempts, and he has a league high saves and games played. So he has been the backbone of this team. I think to me, that was the biggest question mark I had with this squad. And then you're seeing bounce back performances this year from Matt Duchene, Mikael Granlund, Ryan Johansson. So I think this is a really competitive hockey team, and they've taken me by surprise.
Before we do our betting for beginners segment here, I don't want to call it betting for dummies. Before we do our betting for beginner segment, have you been betting more on Nashville this year? I'm just curious, and I don't want to forget that question, compared to how much you thought perhaps you were going to bet on them.
Yes, absolutely. And I think the difference between this year and years prior, I mean, they've always been a really good home team. I mean, I've been to Bridgestone Arena. It's a fantastic game, fantastic atmosphere to watch a game. They've always been one of the better teams in the league on home ice. But, you know, when we get into, you know, the betting talk, there is some value to be found, especially with some road teams. And I found particularly in maybe the second month of the season, this was a team that was winning a lot of games away from Nashville as dogs, right? Even playing the Devils. Like, they were a dog playing a team like New Jersey or, you know, a mediocre team in the Eastern Conference. So I found there's been a lot of value. And yeah, from a shot prop standpoint, I mean, you have your studs and Roman Josi and Philip Forsberg, but a guy like Matt Duchene, just taking a look at some of his numbers this season, he has been a goddess from the shot prop standpoint. He's been terrific value. And even Mikael Granlund, there's been times where I think he's got, what, 32 assists, 12th most in the NHL. 2 months ago, he was plus 180, plus 200 for an assist playing on one of the better lines in the league. So there's been a lot of value when it comes to Nashville. And I think a lot of people at FTN have been profiting from some of that value.
We've got Chris Meany here at Chris Meany from FTN Network, host of Mean Streets. I could talk to you about gambling all day long and about shot props and everything, but let's dive into this betting for beginners. Glenn, take it away.
Let's do it, because on this show, Justin and I have talked to Matt about betting and gambling in the NHL, but that's pretty much the extent of the conversation on Penalty Box Radio. So I'm actually very glad that you're here, because it's not something that we've discussed at length. But I know there are listeners, and this is myself included, who are very curious about the idea of it, the processes behind it. I don't know if you're a fan of The Office, but as Michael Scott would say, explain it to me like I'm five. But in all seriousness, if somebody is listening, they're curious about dipping their feet in, but they're kind of overwhelmed, they don't even know how to properly begin, what would your best advice be to somebody like me?
First of all, is there anybody who doesn't like The Office?
If they do, we don't talk to them.
We don't. Yeah. I've seen them. I've come across them on dating apps and I just swipe left because that's not an option.
Swipe the other way. Yeah. Good call. You know, I think there's a lot of value and Maddie knows this from just, you know, puck lines, whether it's betting, you know, on a favorite, sometimes instead of that, paying that heavy juice, for an example, a Colorado Avalanche, we'll just talk about them. You know, Nashville fans are well aware of the Avs and, you know, on home ice, they're pretty much unstoppable. And if you think that they're going to win the game, you know, minus 300 favorites, there's just not a lot of value to be had on taking them on the money line to just straight up win the hockey game. But, you know, the puck line in the NHL, I think, has created a lot of value. I mean, you bring in more profit at a reduced price. So, for example, you can get Colorado most times, even against just mediocre teams in the NHL, plus money to win by a couple goals. And this is new to me. I haven't seen this in years past, but now you could get them plus money to, you know, to win by three goals, or the other way around, another team to go into Colorado and not to lose by three goals and have a terrific value at, from that standpoint as well. So I don't know, like from a, just a beginner's standpoint, I would say to certainly follow trends. You want to look at home and away splits. You know, across other sports, there's obviously a lot of travel in MLB and, you know, in NFL and things like that. But you got to follow teams that are playing four games in seven nights or the second half of a back-to-back. And, you know, even good teams, typically they lose those back-to-back games, whether they're on the road or not. So there is some value to be had if you just follow some trends. I would say look at home and away splits. Take a look at teams that are playing lengthy home stands and other teams that are playing lengthy road trips near the end of that road trip, or also maybe a team that has played, you know, for example, the Islanders were a team that started off the season 13 games in a row on the road, and then they go home and they're a little flat, right? And sometimes I notice that with teams that have been on lengthy road trips and they come home, maybe it's impressing the fans or whatnot, but they're a little flat, little loose in particular. But I think overall, you just really need to follow all the trends of certain teams of what they're doing, right, Matt? I mean, home and away splits are huge, and also, you know, special teams. And you were talking about the Predators here, and I think John Hines has done a really good job with this Nashville team, not only this year but last year, one of the worst teams in the league in terms of power play percentage and penalty kill percentage. And now this year, they've really flipped the switch, and that's good coaching. So I think that's another thing that you want to follow is special teams.
This might sound like an obvious question, but how much of a role does financial discipline play, not just in the success when betting overall, but just the experience the person is going to have? Because I'm sure the conversation of a fiscally responsible person is having a far different conversation than somebody that's just dumping all their money in to chase all of their losses.
That's a fantastic question. It really is. And I get that a lot as well over at FTN. We have a Discord channel where, you know, we talk about bankroll management and, you know, things to find in betting. And, you know, I think that I would say just start, if you're just new to betting, start really just slow. And I know it's really tempting when you see, okay, well, I pick this team and I also pick that team and I also slam an over in there and I look at this payout. Oh my goodness, this is fantastic. But it's so tough to hit those parlays, to hit 3 for 3, 4 for 4, 5 for 5. The payout is really nice. But I would suggest just starting slow with a single game, whether it's a total or a team total, maybe Nashville over 2.5 goals on the road. You know, a UC Saros over 32.5 saves, or, you know, we talked about Matt Duchene. He's been at a reasonable price all year. He started off plus money, and then, you know, to have three shots is like minus 120. You put down 1.2 units or $1.20, $1.20, you get back a dollar. So I would just start really slow, start with single games, get a feel for things, maybe build a bankroll that way. And then you can start, you know, once you build that bankroll, then you could take a shot on maybe a two-leg parlay or a three-leg parlay and, quote unquote, start to get a little greedy. Hopefully it works out.
I wish you could have told me all of that when I first started betting instead of, like you said, me going.
So somebody told me that too.
Yeah, it's like, wow, $20 on all seven of these things gets me $3,000. Sure, that sounds like fun. And then you're
Because it sounds so exciting. Yeah.
And then exactly. After a week, you bet Monday to Friday, you're down $100 and go, where are my thousands of dollars? It like, after that week of just betting smartly and just doing singles to go with your parlays and things like that, your bankroll might not be flashy, but I promise you, if you are confident in your bets and you're being smart about it, following trends like Chris was saying, your bankroll will go up and up and up and up. It's people search for that big lottery ticket parlay hit, and trust me, when it hits, you tell everybody, you do a happy dance, it's a lot of fun, but it's more fun not having to redeposit into your bank account over and over and over again. Chris, I know we were talking before the show, but tell the folks where to find you over at FTN Network. Tell us what shows you have going on, where we can find you on Twitter, all that good stuff.
Yeah, at Chris Meany, keep it simple, M-E-A-N-E-Y, Eeny, Meany, Miny, Mo. FTN Bets, FTN Fantasy, and FTN Daily. I have a weekly show called Mean Streets on Game Plus Network. We stream it live from our FTN YouTube page Monday to Friday at 12 Eastern, just all sports. Matt, you know I'm a big hockey guy, yep. So I talk a lot of hockey on there. And, you know, we're turning the page from the NFL to Major League Baseball. We're touching on everything, PGA. We're doing some esports stuff here pretty soon. So covering all the sports and a show twice a week. And those listening in Nashville probably very well aware of Eric Young, the Eric Young, a diehard Preds fan. I twice a week dangle bet Selly over at ftmbets.com. You can watch it. You can hang out with us. We talk everything from fantasy hockey. We've run through the daily schedule, talk some bets, some props, some DFS, NHL DFS stuff there as well. That is Tuesdays and Thursdays, roughly around 10 Eastern, whenever I get Eric out of bed.
Yeah. You and EY are one of my favorite listens for hockey for sure. Chris, thank you so much for coming on the show. Coming up next, we have Nick Andrade from Sportsnet and the Steve Dangle Podcast Network to chat coming up in the sports media industry and what exactly it's like to just survive in it. ESPN 102.5 The Game, Penalty Box Radio. And welcome back to Penalty Box Radio on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Big thanks to Chris Meany for stopping by at Chris Meany. I promise you, if you just DM that guy going, please help me gamble and teach me how to do it, he will be more than happy to teach you the ropes. On right now, we have Nick Andrade. I'd be lying if I didn't say he's one of my closest buddies that I've known in this industry for so very long. Nick is a producer and editor over at Sportsnet. Also, big congratulations, recently hired at the Steve Dangle Podcast Network, producing, editing, doing all your fun stuff there as well. Nick, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Friend.
Thank you for having me. This is great to be here, guys.
We're thrilled. And I just think that sports media is the hot topic right now. A lot of people want to get into it. A lot of people want to run away from it. A certain team that we can't talk about. But you and I literally started this day one together in sports media. And we've worked together as recently as last month. Like, we've been in the trenches for this field for so long. Nick, what would you say to someone who is considering either a career change into sports media or is considering going to school for sports media?
It's tough because it's a lot of work. I think that's the number one thing, is especially when you're working in sports, people often associate it with fun right off the bat, which is, again, if you love sports, it's an easy thing to get into, but it's a lot of hard work. So, I mean, for me specifically, is I went to university to become a teacher, and I full 180 love sports. So I decided to go to a sports college and go from there. So I did that 180, and I was relatively a little bit later in my 20s when I decided to do so. And it's tough, but it's worth it. But there are aches and pains that everyone has to deal with at certain points. Mm-hmm. So I think the main thing is always being patient is the key.
I think that's important that you bring that up, because we live in a world where on social media, everybody sees the highlight reel and they think, oh, this is all fun. Everything is great. You don't have to work. Look at them living their best life. But remembering that it's a job and it's requires patience.
Yeah. And I don't know, the thing as well is, I don't know, you put in your time and sometimes it may not, you may not see where it ends up. Right. So you might be grinding for years and years and it's not really paying off. And then again, you see on social media, it's the highlights, it's the best parts of everyone's careers. And you have to take that with a grain of salt as well, because everyone's showing their best qualities. They're not showing their lowest and things that maybe go wrong or whatever, but you never know what opportunity is around the corner. Like for me specifically, a lot of has happened to me in January of this year. Whereas the last 2 years since the COVID pandemic started, I didn't really necessarily know where I was going. And there are times where you could quit. But I think if you stay the course and you truly believe in what you want to do, then 100%, you just got to stay patient, stay focused, and something good will turn out of it.
I think for me in sports media, that knowing your self-worth in this industry is so much more important, not compared to other places, but it's really good to have that thought in the back of your head. And I guess my question to you, Nick, is this a good industry to always be a yes person, just saying yes to every single thing? Or are there times where you should temper it back? Because I mean, most advice that professors give to their students is say yes to every opportunity, say yes, say yes, say yes. And I'll let you dive into it. But personally, I think that's kind of a flawed mentality. And I think we share the same view here.
Judging from experience, I was a yes person for a very long time. I probably still am, even though I want to tell myself that I'm not. But it's really important in this industry. Not that I would say people would take advantage of you, but if you say yes to everything, which again, I don't think there's any opportunity that you shouldn't say no to. Like, don't have anything ever beneath you. You know, any opportunity can lead to something. It can also lead to good connections, networking, learning from other people. There's a lot to experience from that. But at the same time, I've been in this industry for 7 years. What I can learn from my experiences in saying yes most of the time is there needs to be at some point boundaries that are set in terms of, because a lot of burnout happens in this industry. And in order to combat that, you need to have certain boundaries with your bosses, with your coworkers, whatever it is, in order to kind of get the best out of you. And that's the most important thing, is you can say yes to everything, but if you're burnt out and you're not giving your all, then people can maybe either take advantage of you or think that you're not worth it. So you always have to make sure that you're at the best point in what you can do. And if you're at capacity, you're at capacity.
What is like a typical day for Nick Andrade working in sports media, which people who try to make plans with people who work in sports media are often disappointed, because we don't work fun 9-to-5s.
No,
we work. You want to stay up until 3 a.m.? Okay. So what's a typical day for you, Nick? I mean, you're balancing two jobs at two pretty spectacular places.
Yeah, it's all over the place. The freelance life may not be for everyone. Maybe you're suited for a full-time role where you like sort of routine or whatnot. But for me, you're kind of juggling everything that you're doing at once. So as a producer editor for Sportsnet, I'm normally editing and producing video content, either talking to talent, recording, editing, putting things together. And that's not necessarily like a time, like it's not a timed event. You don't know how long that's going to be. So like a regular day, I might spend 4 or 5 hours on an edit. Then I would have to jump on a call and record a podcast and then edit said podcast. And that's my other job. And you're kind of dipping into everything all at once, all together at the same time. So there's no control, but as long as you can maintain your schedule and try to find, you know, what works for you, the hours may be a little off, but as long as you're getting through everything you need to do, but you know, for me, like a typical day today is the Chris Johnson show I produce on Mondays at 9 a.m. We do that. We record the show. I edit the show. And then after that, I was editing an NHL video for NHL players' favorite Super Bowl foods and favorite halftime shows. Very dry, by the way. NHL players don't give you a lot.
That's what we were
maybe you
saying
can tell
earlier.
In All-Star Weekend. Yep. They're pretty dry. There are a couple, you know, good ones in the bunch, but overall, they are not very good.
We did. We talked about that in the first segment. And speaking of the All-Star Weekend, mm-hmm. we were talking about how, like, for instance, when it came to Nashville, I got to experience the entire scope of this event, right? But when you're watching on TV, it doesn't always translate. A lot of the thrill of the All-Star game is being there. At least for me, when I watch it after experiencing it just kind of comes up short. So I'm just curious, just from a media perspective, in your opinion, do you think that there is some way that the league could possibly highlight and capture those parts of All-Star Weekend that maybe people watching at home don't really get, but that could possibly get them more excited about this game?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how it translates because, again, like when you're at the event, it's so much different. Like even the Winter mm-hmm. Classics, it's the same thing. As the mm-hmm. atmosphere is to die for, but you don't really get that temperature at home. And it's the same thing for the All-Star game. I think they're getting better though. This 3-on-3 tournament, the new skills that they're doing, they're trying new things. The players are having more fun. You saw that with Trevor Zegras and everything that was going on Friday. But I think they're starting to find a way where it's more fun. It's starting to climb towards NBA in terms of that level, but I still don't think it's there yet. And I'm not necessarily sure how you translate it because it's super fun when you go. But for me, like the 3-on-3 tournament is still a snooze fest.
Like, I think the best part, I was looking back and was when John Gibson, this was posted like a day after the All-Star game. John Gibson was trying to get Trevor Zegras to go to center ice and do the worm. Like, if you show me that on a broadcast, like even that right. exchange, then I'm yeah. way more entertained instead of seeing it yeah. on social media. And like the argument can be made that, well, it's only a social media clip. Put it on both. I mean, if
yeah.
there's a little kid, and we were talking about it earlier in the first segment, like little Jimmy, 8 years old, watching this, seeing a bit of personality mm-hmm. from mm-hmm. two fun guys in the league trying to do the worm, which I mean, you probably try to do the worm when you're a kid and it hurts a lot. But that's the kind of thing that I think helps grow the game. That's the kind mm-hmm. of banter back and forth that you want to see instead of, yeah, it was a fun 3-on-3 game. We got pucks in deep. Kind of bad that we can't hit each other. But, you know, that's how the game goes. Like, that does nothing mm-hmm. for nobody.
It starts with, like Trevor Zegras in the skills comp. How did he not win the breakaway challenge?
Because it's rigged.
That's like he got a 9 from some of the judges. Like, it made no sense. But no one remembers that Alex Pietrangelo won the event. Everyone's going to remember
Zegras. I know.
Yes, because Pietrangelo after the game was, or after the event, literally went, took a drum, skated over with the drum to his kids and went, yeah, I just did this for my kids. And he just kept saying that over and over again.
That's right there. Like the translation aspect of it, like you need to focus on your stars and the guys who can communicate well. And there's no more these team player kind of guys. You need the stars. You need them to highlight and showcase it. Because if you don't, it's just going to be boring 3-on-3 tournaments with guys who are just team players who, you know, can't really speak to the media. And it's no offense mm-hmm. to them. That's how they were grown up in the game since they were kids. Yeah. But as we see these new personalities grow, you have to put a spotlight on them in order for the game to grow, especially for All-Star Weekend.
If you could create a mantra for people entering sports media, just a quick little mantra that I would tattoo on myself, but I won't, what would it be? Just a piece of advice.
I think I said this earlier, you have to be patient with where you want to go. And you also need to know what you want to do. Because if you want to be on air or you want to be an editor, producer, or something like that, figure out what ways and avenues are best to get there and who you can connect with along the way. Because there are a lot of times that people, like, again, you do say yes to everything, but it's not into something that you necessarily love. So you kind of have to find that pathway to that. And I think that's a way to get there. And also just put it out in the universe. It's always important mm-hmm. to put out what you want into the universe and just try to get to your goals as best as possible.
Nick, where can people find you on Twitter? Also, tell us about Autosave Podcast before you get out of here.
At Nick Andrade is my Twitter account, and Autosave is a video game podcast that I do. It's very fun. We kind of do a catalog of it's almost like a book club for video games, where we go through games and have a lot of fun with it. But you can check me out on Twitter at Nick Andrade.
Thank you so much to Nick for joining us on the show. Coming up next, we have a Q&A section where I am going to actively do my best to not answer questions that have to do with puns about my last name. You're listening to Penalty Box. I know. You're listening to Penalty Box Radio on ESPN 102.5. Welcome back to Penalty Box Radio on 102.5 The Game, ESPN. This is it. This is our fourth and final segment, and we're going to have a bit of fun because I'm afraid of what you will do to me if I don't let us answer some of these last name pun questions.
Yep.
But we're going to save those for towards the end.
That works. As long as you don't rob me of the experience of watching you have to answer them, or at least read them out.
I'll let you read some of them out because...
I would love to. I would take pride in that.
Like, going to Best Buy is a nightmare for me. If they ever ask for my name on like extended warranties and things like that, they're like, haha, you're kidding. It's like
you're no, messing I, with
yeah,
me.
Yeah, it's like, oh no, I'm just giving you a fake ID for fun. Yeah. And then Matt Wurst the second. See, I'm already fired up about this.
they're like, dude's got jokes.
Oh, it's the worst. All right. We have one here. Who are the most important players that need to keep current performance or improve down the stretch? And has at Best of Matt ordered his Janot jersey yet? This one's from Kyle Perkins.
Have you ordered your jersey yet?
No, I haven't ordered the jersey yet. I need Janot to do a bit more for me in like next year and the year after. Then I would order the jersey. Because honestly,
right now it's just in consideration.
Yes, it is in consideration, but it is not a definitive thing. But to answer the question, I mean, Tanner Janot is a guy who needs to keep that performance up. The thing with Tanner Janot is tempering expectations for his future, not just this season, because you look at a guy like Janot and he's not built to score 30 to 40 goals a year and get that 80 to 90 points. And the argument is, well, he can grow, he can develop, but he's shown no signs in the far past or in the past throughout his career that he is going to be that elite goal scorer or he's going to be that elite points getter. To me, he's a JVR. He's a James Van Riemsdyk. Knows where to be in front of the net, has great hands around the net, has his discipline, and he can hit people and do things that would, I kind of want to swear, but I'm not going to swear on air. And that's how Tanner Janot makes me feel. So he's got my heart here for that question.
I think, honestly, I mean, the obvious, you've got your Philip Forsberg, you want Matt Duchene to keep going, you want Ryan Johansson, you want Tanner Janot. But I think for me, I mentioned this briefly earlier, I want the decor to stay strong in front of Juuse Saros. I just have this like underlying fear that at some point he is going to, I mean, he's going to stay Juuse Saros. He's going to be amazing. And without realizing it, he might put the team on his back. And I don't want that scenario to happen. I don't want him to get worn down.
Yeah.
So for me, it's just the decor as a whole. I want them to stay strong in front of him while also everyone else staying offensive. So that's my biggest right now, is not even a concern, but I just don't even want it to become a concern.
Yes. Just that creeping fear of, oh, please don't do this.
Yeah. I don't want to see it. I don't want to watch it.
All right. This one might cause some controversy. Danielle asks, pancakes or waffles? And why is the only answer waffles?
Okay. First of all, I'll go first.
Yes.
I'm not big on either. I'm going to get kicked out of my country for saying that.
Oh, boy.
I see it in your face. Uh-huh. But if they're presented in front of me, I'm going to pick the waffle and I'm going to enjoy it.
What are your ideal toppings? I feel like toppings makes...
Only syrup, butter, and some blueberries.
Okay. So I'm coming down to Nashville at the end of this month. I think I need to bring like 6 different people jugs of maple syrup, and now you're on the list as well. So you're going to get some legitimate Canadian maple syrup. For me, pancakes or waffles, why is the only answer waffles? Honestly, I used to be a big pancakes guy and just always pancakes, always pancakes. But to me, waffles are just easier, and I can put strawberries on either because I love strawberries. And I agree with Danielle. I will, at this current part of my life, will say waffles.
And there's something about the
crisp. That's it. Yeah,
that you don't get with the pancake.
Unless it's done like perfectly. Shout out to my mom.
Yeah.
And anyone who says their mother doesn't make good pancakes, shame on you. Shame on you.
All righty, let's answer this one here. What do you think about the Preds' forward prospects, mainly speaking Tomasino, Afanasyev, Evangelista, Zachary Leroux, and Svechkov? We could talk about all of them in depth for a very long time, but the one person I do want to talk about right now is Phil Tomasino, because Tomasino's expectations coming into the season were you could jump into a top six role, you could become a 15 to 20 goal scorer in your rookie season, you were supposed to be the Calder candidate for the Predators, not Tanner Jeannot. Sometimes it takes these pure goal scorers a little longer to develop, and sometimes they will have a wicked 2 to 3 month flash like a Jason Robertson, and then kind of slow down a bit. Like Nick was saying in our last segment at Nick Andrade, it's just patience. Patience, patience, patience. I've seen a lot of white flags around Phil Tomasino, people giving up on him. Don't give up on him. Out of all the guys I just listed, he has the highest ceiling, and I honestly would like to say it's not even close.
Yeah. I mean, you know what you're getting with Tomasino. The skill is there. It's just a matter of getting him to that point where he's playing a very consistent game. And I'll touch on Afanasyev. Justin and I talk about him all the time on the show. We love his personality, but also as a player, I mean, this is a guy who uses his size to his advantage. He's a very mobile player. He's not afraid to charge at the net. And I just don't think that you could go wrong with a player like that. The Predators, you know, we had that in the Predators had that here in Patrick Hornquist for a while, and then didn't really have that for a while. And so I think a player like that is always going to be beneficial to a team.
And a quick shout out to Evangelista, who is lighting up the OHL, named player of the week there. My only advice, if I were his agent, his coach, or anything, is just keep playing your game. That's it. This whole season, he's been fantastic, but this was just a continued outburst. So just keep playing your game, keep developing there.
Matt, I've got a couple questions for you.
I knew it was coming.
I'm just going to go ahead and put them back to back. You can answer them at the same time. Okay. How does that sound? All right. I don't even know if I can do this. Are you the best Matt Best? Is there a better Matt Best? Who bests the best Matt Best? That's from Jack Woods.
Of course.
John Jensen.
Oh, good.
Of course. Do you ever feel the crushing existential expectation that you must always be at your best? Your capital best.
At least these are creative instead of just boring last name puns.
Very creative. Like Jack, I almost didn't make it through that one. I almost didn't make it through it.
That one is very hard to say. Are you the best Matt Best? Is there a better Matt Best? Who bests the best Matt Best? Like,
I'm going to be saying that in my sleep tonight.
Yeah, I can't even do that. Oh. We could spend the next 4 minutes talking about pun twisters. No, but like I was saying, last name puns to me, I've been interviewing for different jobs over the last week, and almost every single one has had a last name pun, and I have to do the polite he-he-he thing about it every single time.
As if you've never heard it again.
So I do appreciate, I didn't read these like in depth because I was like, oh, good, last name puns. But honestly, John and Jack, not bad. Not bad at all.
I know. It's rare that they're going to let us down, you know?
Yeah.
They're usually pretty good on Twitter.
Yeah.
I'll hand it to them.
Yeah. No, they did it. They did it tonight for us.
And then I saw a photo. Come through from John Jensen that I don't understand. So
do we ever understand John Jensen?
No.
You hope you do.
Okay. Yeah. I zoomed in and I'm like, I don't even know. Y'all need to go to Twitter and look at this. but yeah, let's see. Do we have any more? Let's see.
Ooh, I like
this. What's the worst? Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
What's the worst trade rumor you've ever heard from Peyton Turnage? I'm going to have to think back on this one.
Let me think about this rumor. I grew up being a Leafs fan for most of my life. I've always lived like near the Toronto area, or because I am Canadian, even when we did not live in Toronto. So my trade rumor will be very Toronto specific. It's when Matt Sundin was still on the team and people thought that the Leafs were going to trade. It was Matt Sundin and Brian McCabe were on the team, and they thought a trade for Matt Sundin with Brian McCabe going to the Flames for Jerome Iginla was going to happen. And this was towards the end of Sundin's career when he had his final swan song in Vancouver and Jerome Iginla was still tearing it up and being on the cover of video games. Those like big name blockbuster trades are the absolute worst for me?
I'm trying to think back, and I only remember one that involved Shea Weber while he was still with Nashville. But I don't remember the specifics of it, but it was one of those ones where it couldn't even pass as like a prank, right? You're looking at it and you're like, okay, you're going to get what, a pick for, okay. Uh-huh. And people honestly started passing it around like it was gospel. And I was shocked that people even entertained the idea of it, but I don't remember. It was so minuscule in return that I don't even remember what it was. But yeah, that's a good question though. That actually, I need to dig deeper in my brain.
Those are the kind of trade rumors that like an eighth grader comes up with, because this is no knock. It's just they don't know any other team other than theirs. And they know like the big superstars. And if I'm offending any of you young kids out there, I am sorry. It's just me and eighth grade didn't know a lot of other teams.
Or they make it so obvious that they're like, nobody's going to really believe that. And they watch people pass it around and then they're laughing because they're like, how did you believe that? Yeah, that's not even possible.
Speaking of laughing, though, this has been fantastic. Like I said to you when we were off the air, it was so good just to see a friendly, familiar face to start the show. And I'm looking forward to coming down this month, seeing you, seeing Justin, seeing everybody. That it's
I'm
been
so
long
excited.
Overdue.
It has been. And I was thrilled, like I said to you, when Justin said I have you and Gover filling in for him, I was like, oh, that, I'm good that because Justin I adore Bradford. You both. This is good. That Justin B. Bradford, he's something.
Yeah.
And so it's been a pleasure.
He's probably enjoying his drink service on his cruise.
I was
right
just
now.
About to say yeah. His endless drinks. I know he was super pumped about that.
Yeah,
nobody, that was one of the first pictures that he tweeted.
Nobody
was them taking advantage
a vacation more than that guy.
I know.
He has meant a lot to me in my career, just giving me opportunity after opportunity, being a soundboard for everything. So shout out to you, Justin. Thank you for this opportunity. Thank you to everybody for tuning in. You were listening to Penalty Box Radio on ESPN 102.5. The